In both adjustments, these are spot plays. So those who felt it was running sustained would bet Olympia and Sensi. Those who went with the proper concept because of the would go with Sensi and Krush as their things. And under any circumstances, you'd probably bet Sensi, Olympia, and Krush in your three-way exacta and win it.
Okay.
Now go to the button. Go beyond all this.
Let's go beyond.
These are your numbers, which you're all very familiar with.
Next screen.
These are your fractional numbers relative to the dream race,
which are very important. Next screen. And there's the worst screen.
There's the worst screen you can look at, which is the sort.
It's all right.
Your MUV is very important.
It shows Sensi and Krush
closest to the face.
Hit the next screen.
Here's the one I want you to see.
No, the neck.
Well, that's all right. That shows Krush, Sensi, and Lee are running against the best early. Krush and Sensi and Olympia comes up as the third best presser, and in your final screen you have the horses that should have come in first, second, and third, but Olympia didn't fire that day. Move the thing up. These other ones are just totals of the things you've seen before, but this is the most important screen. This is the screen that you should memorize and learn things about.
Yeah.
The point is that those numbers in the EXD deceleration ratio are the most important. If you like numbers, those are the key to the mint.
Big one?
You don't have to key for that. It's the last thing that comes up. If you just patiently go through the program, if you learn what these two screens mean, and I'm not going to teach you because they're obvious. High is best.
On that right hand,
the left hand side is probably the most vital, and you'll find usually that at least two horses will have hundreds.
And the horses with the least discrepancy
in their numbers. You see, Sensi, you wanted his 99 something all the way across.
Fleet drops to a 98.
Leave drops down to a 98. They're lower numbers.
Frequently,
you'll find a horse with a middle 100. If you discount or don't have some kind of money on a horse with a middle 100, you're in trouble, or you put in some wrong horses.
Okay,
I just wanted to review it so that nobody would say that they didn't know what they were looking at. That's it.
Don't forget to write down
your questions now that you want answered in Crossfire, and put them up here on the table.
Get them to me
before 10 o'clock.
There's a section in the manual.
We've talked a lot about technique and a lot about... A lot about procedures and a lot about information and a lot about...
Manuals
and instructions and what have you, but
one of the most inspiring guys
in Perko, when he's not eating sushi,
is the Reverend
Burt May.
Now a lot of you say,
"Hey, can I?" I've been asked in the hall and asked in this room, "Can you really make a living at this? Can you really support yourself on this? If something's happened to my job or my insurance business or my restaurant, could I go out and make a living at this?"
The answer, for some, I'm sure, is going to be no. But the answer for many is yes.
For those who think no, it'll surely be no.
For those who think yes, it will surely be yes.
The Reverend Burt Main was assigned after he got out of Princeton.
He'll tell it.
But I like to build him up a little bit because he's a little humble, like most
ministers.
Unlike most ministers, I should say.
He's a Christian.
He's the first Christian I ever met who was actually almost a Christian.
The other one I knew
is my father. He died. And Burt was given a very low-paying country pastor's trial run when he got out of Princeton Divinity School with two small, run-down, rattly shack, needed a roof, churches in upstate New York. They gave him a Sears and Roebuck, one of those things you buy from a kit to live in. You ever see on a Sears and Roebuck? They wheel it to your house on a truck, to your lot on a truck, and you put it up.
Like
an erector set, where the roof goes here. That's what they gave him to live in.
To him,
an extra $50 a month was the difference
between
being able to hold up his head to his wife and his budding family and say, "Hey, I'm making it, and having to live off the charity of his parishioners." And if you've ever been a Presbyterian parishioner, they don't have a whole lot of charity, folks.
I'll let him
tell the rest of the story, but
he may be a little
too humble to admit it, but he
not only started
betting for the $50 bank
and worked up to a
$1,000 bank,
but
when he got to the point where he could reap the benefits of that $1,000 bank,
he
produced what is known as the Dean's Fund, which is an imaginary non-existent fund in which they give away money to parishioners in need. So keeping his bank at $1,000 is very difficult because of his generosity. But here's a man who has truly represents not just the procedure and the mechanics of the methodology, but the true spirit of the methodology, the Reverend Burt Maybe.
Thank you, Harry.
One note of clarification, one thanks to Howard,
that usually when I've been introduced in the past, he has my career, including playing guitar in brothels, and I keep saying I never worked in a soup kitchen in my life, so brothels, I don't know. Anyway, also, in the Presbyterian system, the way that works, I wasn't given two little tiny parishes, I chose them, and that has a lot to do with my concept of risk-taking and my enthusiasm for living a little bit on the edge. When I was an entertainer and traveled around playing and singing for years, I liked the idea of doing a one-man show because there's no place to hide. Either you produce or you croak. Actually, I wrote a song where I could go, so if I croak, maybe I get applause. You know, I mean, anything, hedge the bet. The place I live is, it's a kit, Sears 1923, Sears kit home, and the place had no insulation whatsoever. This is in upstate New York.
Where the winters are reasonably severe,
always interesting. There were 6 inches of space between the outside walls and the sheathing and the inside sheetrock.
Space.
You couldn't have a candlelight dinner because the candles would blow out in the wintertime, you know? Terrible, terrible place. So we figured there were a number of things we needed to amend. And I read about this fellow Sarton in Phillips Racing newsletter. And thought, doctor, right. You know, because everybody's professor this, doctor that. Okay, and he wanted some exorbitant amount of money, like $67, I think it was, at the time, for this Timex Sinclair computer program or something. It was, I'd heard Phillips was supposed to be somehow reputable, so I thought I'd give it a whirl,
figuring
that it was money down the toilet. But
strangely enough,
here I am,
years later, saying,
no, it wasn't.
The struggle that I think a lot of people have
with the methodology has nothing to do with the numbers,
and
everything to do with how they approach the numbers. There are some among you that are engineers, mathematicians, that know numbers better than I'm ever going to know. If any of you out there, by the way, knows what fuzzy arithmetic or fuzzy numbers are, well, this is something about fuzzy mathematics. The word fascinates me, and one of my daughters wanted to know what in the world are fuzzy numbers. So if you can tell me in about 25 words or less after sometime during the next intermission, please, because I'm fascinated with the idea of fuzzy. To me, fuzzy mathematics was anything after about fourth grade. including algebra twice, geometry twice, trigonometry one and a half times. In my senior year, I realized that I didn't need it to graduate with a New York State Regents diploma, so I quit trigonometry and took car shop, which was infinitely more fun and proved more valuable, I think. Anyway, the whole basis of the methodology is not really numbers. The real basis of the methodology is people who are not winners becoming winners.
It's not numbers.
It's not numbers.
If it were numbers,
mathematicians would have cracked this thing long, long ago.
And at risk of being redundant,
because every time I've spoken, I've said this, why do you think a clinical psychologist was able to crack this thing and not people with mainframe computers feeding in all the minutiae, you know, what the jockey's Aunt Tilly had for breakfast last Thursday, some of the stuff these guys put in these programs. It would be wonderful if you had all the time in the world, or everybody here took one single factor and entered it, because you have these things, the data entry problems alone are monumental. And instead, working with a therapy group, what Howard did was to say, what's going to make people win? The first thing was the idea that you could win. That concept alone.
Still eludes
some of the folks who come to these seminars.
The idea that you really can win.
It really is possible.
We work
so often against ourselves rather than with ourselves.
One of the reasons that I'm teaching
the Silver Mind Method is because I find this a good way to get to the parts of us that we need to reprogram, as it were, to understand we can do some things.
The basis of the methodology
has never been,
will you or won't you,
we will make you a winner.
Buy this product,
it will make you a winner.
Read this manual,
it will make you a winner. That's never been the proposition.
Advance.
With the Sarton methodology.
What has been advanced is, Nobody can make you a winner
except you.
The good news is,
you can.
Not me.
Not him.
Not the man on the Stetson. Not anybody with phases 1 through 16. But you. One of the things I saw happening with the questions, saw happening with the responses. Yesterday was a kind of a problem of seeing the forest for the trees.
There are a lot of trees now in the methodology.
We've got this phase and that phase and this program and that program and this manual and that manual and this approach and that approach.
And those are all trees, but the forest is the important thing. And the forest is looking at a race, as first of all, in the immortal words of Jim, just a dang horse race.
Understanding that this is an event that takes place between equine contestants
that you're going to watch on the video or stand up close and see as they run past you at the rail, that you're going to try and figure out the outcome of before it happens. That's all it is.
It's not you against the cosmos.
You and Lady Luck. You and Death. It's none of these things.
Just a dang horse race.
Not all that big a deal.
It becomes a big deal as we invest it with big dealism.
There are a number of things that go right into the face of the methodology. The methodology was something that said you can become a winner. The methodology was something that said, in its most, to me, the essential part of the understanding of the mechanical aspects of it is, again, in the immortal words of Jim, there's only two ways a horse race works, and that's either one horse goes out and wins it, or one horse goes out and gets caught by the horse that wins it.
That's it.
It's only two ways they set up. You ever see a horse race do anything but that?
Either one of them goes out all the way,
wire to wire, or one of them goes out, or a couple of them, and they get nipped by whoever wins.
Two scenarios.
Pick one or two.
If you're wrong, you only missed by one.
Not too bad.
The idea also, one of the fundamentals,
there are only four or five horses in there really have a chance.
Any racing secretary would tell you the same thing.
That's how Howard found out.
He didn't sit there and put some exotic herb in the pipe
and come up with this thing of four or five horses have a real shot. He talked to about, what, 128 racing secretaries or something, and they all said, nah, there's only a couple that really have a go at it.
The rest of them are just in there to get beaten. So you've got four, maybe five horses.
And Howard faced with truck drivers, some of whom make me look like midgets.
He went to the track with these guys under threat of death.
Okay, Doc, this damn well better work. You're raw meat. You know, that kind of attitude.
And so immediately as he's going out there, he's thinking, one horse, my whole life hinges on one. Wait a minute. Two horses. My whole future hinges on two horses. Much better.
Suddenly he had 50% or 100% more chance of living. There's my math for you right there. One and another one, 50% increase. See how fast I did that? But I caught it. I said 100%. I did correct it. I'm getting better and better at these things.
The two-horse methodology was not just a way that we could keep Howard alive long enough to benefit us in 1991. It was also part of the basic spirit of the methodology, which is
be a little gentle with yourselves.
Don't put yourself under so much stress that you're not going to make good choices.
It isn't all hinged on one horse.
You got two horses.
They've got a field in reality.
In reality, you've only got a field of four, maybe five real contenders.
Let's say it's five horses.
Now, you're going to bet two of those suckers. You're betting 40% of the field.
Sounds like a pretty good bet.
Sounds like a pretty good bet to me.
You got four horses
that you really can see as live horses. You're now betting 50% of that four-horse field.
Pretty good.
Losing streaks.
Drop down to a mere minimum.
Instead of this vast long thing of, you read some of the pros and they'll tell you, yeah, you can beat this game, but you've got to look at 25, 35 losses in a row sometimes. Yeah, sure you do. Right? You know, maybe in a movie somewhere you do. About, I think, the 13th or 14th straight loss, and I'm going to sit there and say, look, Sparky, why are we doing this?
Most of us would.
Unless we have some of the classic problems that cause people to keep on betting when they're not winning and keep on putting more money on it and try to catch up. I'm not even going to ask if that sounds familiar.
The approach of the methodology is a rational approach.
It's not to say it's left brain, because it really isn't. Anybody that's ever read anything
from the early manuals
where 2 and 2 frequently came out to be anywhere from 5 to 3.6,
It's not a left-brain approach.
It's not a rules-oriented approach, and that's very left-brain.
Again, the forest for the trees.
We've got so many different
phases, programs, manuals, ways to look at it.
They're not there to confuse you. They're there so you can get a better and better overview of everything.
Read this one, read that one.
Look at the two, compare, contrast, come up to your with your own conclusions.
That's a benefit.
Try this, work with that. Do this other one. That's a benefit.
But hold on to the fact that
it's a cohesive whole.
There's a grounding under this whole thing that's one unified whole.
Someone said last night at dinner, and this is so true.
One of you, one of your clients
said this, and I've